It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday, the 25th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. It continues to be a big news week for Apple. The company's had some flexibility issues with new iPhone 6s, with users complaining of phones bending when stashed in a back pocket. There have also been a few bugs or software problems in the company's new iOS 8 operating system. So, yesterday, the company released iOS 8.0.1 and then pulled that update after reports of further bugs. Forrester's Jeffrey Hammond notes that the issue is many have already opted in.
Over 33% of iPhone users have already upgraded their operating system to iOS 8 since it was released last week. Imagining a third of users upgrading from Windows 7 to Windows 8 in under a week. So it's very unusual and tends to be specific to Apple right now.
As a user, should I be updating immediately all the time, every time?
Usually my recommendation is let somebody else be the guinea pig. With millions of lines of code, and these operating systems are probably somewhere between 10 and 15 million lines of code, there are an endless number of test cases that need to be run. I think, you know, issues with things like HealthKit, which is a new feature, pushed Apple to be aggressive, and hopefully a lot of folks are now the wiser, and they'll be willing to take a breath before they immediately try downloading and installing code.
Jeffrey Hammond, VP at Forrester. This week is Climate Week at the United Nations here in New York. A lot of the talk is about our planet's climate and weather. But there are growing concerns among scientists about weather outside of our atmosphere. I'm talking super solar storms. There are worries the next big one could wreak havoc with lots of our digital technology. Ashley Dale teaches engineering at the University of Bristol in England. Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
What is a solar superstorm?
Every now and then we get these, let's call them volcanic eruptions on the surface of the sun, some of which are equivalent to maybe 100 billion Hiroshima bombs exploding simultaneously.
And the issue is that when that happens, a bunch of radioactive particles are shot out from the sun, perhaps at planet Earth.
That's right. Potentially 1 in 10 of these eruptions will impact the Earth.
The last big solar storm hit Earth in 1859. What happened in that instance?
That essentially wiped out the telegraph infrastructure for some time in the U.S.
How might this look different in 2014?
Essentially, any small changes in voltage in an electronic device are going to fry the circuit of that device, be it an iPad or the power grid. Large currents traveling through the power grid would melt transformers, and these transformers cost on the order of about $10 million a piece and take a few months to replace.
Is there anything we can do to minimize the damage of this sort of thing?
There are numerous things that we can do to mitigate potential damage. Creating more radiation-hardened satellites, upgrading our power infrastructure, a number of things that are very achievable to do with today's technology. It's just a case of pushing the right buttons and making it happen.
Ashley Dale of the University of Bristol in England. All this week, we've been talking about technology and television. I've had conversations with a TV critic, a scribe who supports texting on camera, and an actress from the show Scandal. Today, we're going to hear from an academic who's looking at the second screen experience, apps like Get Glue and others that try to build communities around TV shows and watching live. Well, are they working? And how does TV feel about these second screen apps? Melanie Conan is an assistant professor of media, culture, and communications at New York University. Melanie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Which area, other than Twitter, do you think is sort of the most interesting here or has seen the most pickup in recent years?
Tumblr is sort of an undiscovered territory for vast stretches of the media industry, which I find curious because the younger audience, the millennials, really live on Tumblr now, and that's where a lot of the conversation about television happens.
What is in it for broadcast companies and social media companies when it comes to users having conversations about television on a second screen?
I think for the broadcast networks, when the second screen first became popular, they were very concerned about viewers' attention drifting away from the primary television screen.
Yes.
And then they kind of realized it was a moment to get viewers to watch live.
In a way, it's a tool against cord cutting.
Maybe not so much cord cutting, but I think time shifting. So that's why you have so much live tweeting, for example, by producers and cast members, because it's an incentive to get viewers to tune in live, which is still the most important ratings group for the broadcast networks.
Do you think that we've seen successful second screen companies?
I don't know if they're going anywhere, but people seem to be using them.
Okay.
I think especially with GetGlue, because you get stickers, so there's sort of a tangible reward for checking in and for being engaged on that platform.
What else do you think is interesting about how technology is changing the way that we interact with television and how companies are trying to capitalize on that?
I think for me, the most interesting thing about digital media engagement with television is really the television industry's changed attitude towards Twitter in particular.
Uh-huh.
Because Twitter at first seemed like a threat, and now Twitter is an opportunity.
Melanie Conan is a visiting assistant professor of media culture and communication at New York University. Professor Conan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To hear more of our series on technology and television this week, head to marketplacetech.org. And do you use a particularly good second screen app to watch or talk about your favorite shows? Let me know via my favorite second screen app, Twitter. I'm at The Brock Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.